Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Friday, March the 6th. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, this Sunday is International Women's Day. We go to Rwanda and meet the only woman driving a motorbike taxi.
Most of my customers are men. When I'm with the other motorcyclists waiting for a customer, the men prefer to come to me. I take them safely to their destination.
And we'll also be heading for Zimbabwe, where the government has handed out 8 broadcasting licenses to state-aligned companies.
Well, you need to take a look at the individuals and companies that have been given the licenses. It appears from a distance that, you know, Zimbabwe is opening up the airwaves, but in reality, it's not.
And no peace deal yet on South Sudan, but talks continue. Stay tuned.
Top story.
This Sunday is International Women's Day. Every year since its inception in 1911, the organisers have chosen a special theme to mark the occasion. This year, it's Empowering Women, Empowering Economies. Make it happen. But what does that actually mean? What lies behind that slogan? My colleague Assumpta Latas put that question to Auxilia Ponga, UN representative for women in Southern Africa.
What the slogan really means is that if you empower women in whichever field, you can actually then make it happen for the entire nation, make it happen for the entire human society. Let's imagine that you make it happen for women and health, and they're empowered. We all know that when a woman is healthy, it's not just herself, but it's her children, it's her family, it's her society. And if you were to empower women economically, we actually know that the World Bank has done several studies that are encouraging nations to invest in women. Again, when you invest in a woman economically, she has an income. It means that the children in the home will eat better. The children will go to school. You'll have a healthier home where there is hygiene, because the woman is economically empowered, can buy the things that she needs to make the home healthy.
How important is this day in Africa?
It's very important in Africa because I say to people, when you celebrate your birthday once a year, is that the only time you value the fact that you are alive? No, it's a special day, so we focus on it. So the International Women's Day is important in Africa because on that day, we call the world to attention. We call everyone around us to stop and reflect and begin to say, what are the issues that are affecting women? Where are we as men making a contribution, or where we could contribute better? So those are some of the things that need special focus and need special attention. There are thousands of events actually going on in most of the African countries to mark the economic, political and social achievements of women. So we have organizations such as government, charities, educational institutions, women's groups, and as I said earlier, corporations and the media celebrating this day. It's one way of bringing into focus what women have achieved and what still remains to be done.
Auxilia, one last question. On this very special day, what can we say? What is your message to all the women out there listening to you?
One message is, we've come a long way and we have achieved tremendous success in some areas, but maybe we need to stop as women and say we are where we are, because some women started this fight in 1911 and momentum has built. So for each woman to stop and say, who am I mentoring? What will the next generation of women be like? Have I brought the male partners into focus to realize that unless we work on this issue, as men and women in partnership, we will never get gender equality.
Auxilia Ponga. Now, in Rwanda, motorbike taxis are the main means of transport in the capital, Kigali, and they're mostly driven by men. But there's one exception. Jesko Johansson filed this report, which is presented now by Eunice Banjuru.
Clothed Claudine Nyinawama Jambere is 40 years old and the only female motor rider in the whole of Kigali. Motors are motorbike taxis, and Claudine says being a woman can be an advantage in this male-dominated job.
Most of my customers are men. When I'm with the other motorcyclists waiting for a customer, the men prefer to come to me. They hear my voice, and then they come to me. I take them safely to their destination.
It is rush hour in the Rwandan capital. Cars crawl to the city centre, which gets more and more congested at the crossroads. The small African country is growing fast and construction is going on everywhere. This also slows down the traffic. Claudine winds her way through the traffic. She has been driving her moto on the streets of Kigali for 4 years now.
For a long time, I tried to get a job, but I was not successful. I used to drive a bicycle taxi in my village, so I did the motorcycle driving test, and it motivated me to become a moto driver.
Every now and then, Claudine has to watch out for car drivers who brake abruptly or take off unexpectedly. In Rwanda, the moto drivers and their passengers have to wear helmets. Driving a moto can be dangerous, and accidents occur daily. But in Kigali, motorcycles are the fastest means of transport. There are more than 5,000 motorcycle taxis in the city. Wherever you are, you'll always find a moto. Buses are unreliable and taxis are more expensive and slower. Whether men or women are the best moto drivers is not a big issue among her male colleagues. Jean de Dieu and Jean-Paul Akimana like the idea of women driving motos.
It's okay. She's driving well. No, it's good. It's a good experience.
It's a job like any other, which a woman can also do. I think more women should drive motos.
There are more women than men in the Rwandan parliament. Women are represented throughout government, which also advocates for equality of opportunity in education. Claudine is nevertheless seen as an unofficial women's rights representative.
My female customers say that I'm doing something for women. Because I drive the moto, in a way I contribute to equal rights in our society.
Claudine herself doesn't attach much importance to being the only woman who drives a moto. Other issues are of priority to her.
I need the money for my family. My husband doesn't have a job at the moment, and I'm glad if I can manage to save something.
And that report was written by Jesko Johansson.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
At talks in Addis Ababa, South Sudan's warring factions have missed Thursday's deadline to secure a comprehensive peace deal. Their talks are expected to continue later today. A statement from the regional body mediating the talks, IGAD, urged President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to use the limited time that remained to make progress on issues such as power sharing. Earlier this morning, I called our correspondent in Addis Ababa, Kolota Wanjoe, and asked her why the deadline had not been met.
Now, the delay could have happened probably because of the issue of timing, because we know that according to the agreement that was signed on February 1st, the main principals, that is President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, were supposed to have come to Addis Ababa on 19th February to start deliberating on these issues that would lead further to an agreement on the comprehensive agreement on a framework for transitional government. However, President Salva Kiir only appeared in Addis Ababa on 2nd of March. That was just 3 days to the deadline of March 5th. So the timing was a are big issues. A big issue because they did not have enough time to sort out this whole issue. Because we understand there were about 10 main issues to be discussed, issues that could not be discussed within 3 days. And we understand at least by the deadline there, which is March 5th, probably only one issue had been tackled and not even tackled fully. So they still remained with the issue of the most pertinent issues of the issue of security. Security arrangements, and also the issue of the structure of government, about the power sharing issue, which were not tackled at all. And without these issues, then they're not going to move forward. So the timing was a big issue. Then number two, there was the issue of commitment that is now arising. Was there commitment? Between the two warring factions, if they wanted, because these are people who have understood these problems, they know the underlying issues. And like civil society organizations from South Sudan were saying, these are not new issues. These are issues that the two people, that is President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, know. And if they wanted to really commit to tackle, they would have done it. So there's the issue of timing and the issue of commitment. The two were the main factors for the delay.
But time is running out. Should we expect a breakthrough later today?
Now, yesterday we spoke to the spokesperson of the rebel faction from the high-level negotiation, that is Mr. Pawot Kang, and he said that the aspect of timing should not matter. It's not about deadlines. It's not about a date that's being set by the mediation, but it is about accomplishing the underlying issues and ensuring that the agreement that is signed is comprehensive and it's a durable agreement and a practical one. So the rebel faction doesn't seem to mind much about the timing or about the deadline that has just passed. They're about handling issues, and probably it will be the same for the government too. So, but yesterday, Ambassador Sayoum Misfin, who's the chief envoy of the mediation team, told us that the IGAD mediation has given the warring factions at least one more day. They expect that by the end of Friday, the close of business Friday, that at least an agreement should have been signed. The rebel faction and President Salva Kiir are going into face-to-face consultations again, and looking at the issues the way they are, we don't see a really comprehensive agreement that will come out, because issues have not been tackled. That's the reality. Issues have not been tackled. And if an agreement will be signed by the end of Friday, it will be an agreement that will not be fully accommodating what the South Sudan really needs for a healing process.
Coleta Wanjoe in Addis Ababa. And you'll find more on that story on our website, dw.de/Africa, as further details emerge.
Human rights.
For human rights this week, we go to Nigeria. It is the worst hotspot in Africa for the trafficking of young women and girls to Europe, mostly for the purposes of prostitution. The trafficking is the work of organised criminal gangs. And whereas the criminals make tens of thousands of euros from each victim they traffic, the women themselves suffer hardship and gross violations of their basic human rights. This report now from Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
On arrival in Europe, the trafficked women and girls are usually forced into several years of prostitution while the traffickers collect the proceeds.
They beat air out of us that we must accept prostitution.
Some will be bad people, they will beat you up, some will bring out a gun, some will bring out a knife. It's risky.
Human rights organizations are concerned about the violation of the women's rights. Nenga Godi is program officer of the Lagos-based Clean Foundation, an organization that has carried out studies into trafficking and human rights abuses.
Of course, we are very concerned, and it's surprising that Nigeria has remained one of the big markets for human traffickers. So basically, when one is trafficked, you lose completely all of their rights, because when people are trafficked, they completely lose the protection of the state. So they are at the mercy of the traffickers and the places that they are slotted into, like brothels and crime rings. So whatever little semblance of rights that they still have, it is, that would be the rights that their principals choose to allow them, which is often very little.
The National Agency for the Prohibition of Trafficking Persons and Other Related Matters, NAPTIC, is the government agency combating human trafficking in Nigeria. A key challenge facing the agency is Nigeria's difficult economic situation, which makes many young Nigerians vulnerable to traffickers who promise them a better life in Europe. NAPTIS Executive Secretary Beatrice Jedi Agba says in spite of the challenges, her organization is not relenting in its effort to curb human trafficking.
Obviously, trafficking is not something that NAPTIP can by itself tackle. And so what we are trying to do now is to work with the entire mechanism of government, both at the federal and state level, to ensure that people have sufficient information on issues relating to trafficking. Information is power. Quite a number of people just do not know what trafficking is about. They're not aware of the magnitude of the problem of trafficking.
Human trafficking remains a highly profitable business in Nigeria because there are very many people willing to be taken abroad in hope of a better life. Nigerians involved in trafficking usually become rich overnight, showing off their success with expensive cars and houses. This show of wealth is a common feature in Nigeria's Edo State, which accounts for the bulk of the young Nigerian women and girls trafficked to Europe.
Sam Olukoya reporting. There has been criticism of the way broadcasting licenses have been awarded to 8 new radio stations in Zimbabwe. The licenses have been given to companies aligned to the Zimbabwean state. Critics include the Media Institution of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, and Wilf Mbanga, editor-in-chief of the newspaper The Zimbabwean, told my colleague Assumpta Latus why they were concerned.
Well, you need to take a look at the individuals and companies that have been given the licenses. It appears from a distance that, you know, Zimbabwe is opening up the airwaves, but in reality, it's not. What has happened is they've given one license or two licenses to Supermanduanzira, or his company, ABC Communications. Supermanduanzira is the Minister of Information Technology in the government. He already has a private radio station. So he now has three. The other company that was awarded a license is Zimbabwe Newspapers, which is government-owned. And we also have two more radio stations which were granted to Kingston's book publishers, who are also owned by government. So although it appears that Zimbabwe is opening up the airwaves, it's not in reality.
And what are these stations going to do then? Are they going to broadcast the same kind of material that Zimbabweans are already getting?
Well, they have different programs, but most of them monitor, the ones that we already have, monitor the radio, the national news from the ZBC, the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, which is the government radio station. So they don't have their own journalists. Although they do have music and phone-in programs and so on, but when it comes to news, they relay the news from the national broadcaster.
Well, how did these 8 private radio stations get their licenses? Surely there were some conditions to fulfill, weren't there?
The Broadcasting Authority of Zimbabwe advertised for people, anyone interested in setting up a radio station, to apply. And they all had to meet certain criteria. And everybody applied. I mean, there were more than 20 applications that went in, which were then narrowed down to 12. And out of those 12, 8 have been licensed. But you can see there's duplication. One station, which the government owned, Kingston's, got 2 licenses. The Minister of Information Technology got 2 licenses. And whereas there are other independent players who would like to broadcast, who have the means to establish radio stations, and have been denied.
Why?
They don't give reasons. They've simply said these are the people who have been successful.
The fee for the licenses is very high. It's about $10,000. This must have ruled out some applicants right from the start.
We did, yes. But this was an application fee. So simply to apply, before you're even considered, you part with $10,000.
How would you suggest that it should be, the application fee?
Well, in South Africa, it's the application fee is 3,000 rand, which is something like $300. which is reasonable. You know, I mean, applying does not guarantee acceptance. It's really for the administration. People are going to process your application and so on. So, you know, that's a reasonable fee. But to charge 10,000 is not, you know, in my view, reasonable or fair. And it's meant to punish, you know, make people think twice before they apply. I mean, you know, in my own case, I was interested, but I thought, you know, well, if I apply, I'm not likely to get the license. So you don't apply because I don't want to waste $10,000.
Wilf Mbanga.
Your say.
It's Friday and time to hear your comments on the stories we've been covering over the past week. Here's Isaac Mugabe and Eunice Wanjuru.
To begin with, this week we posted a story on our Facebook page concerning the influx of asylum seekers to Europe after Germany's interior minister proposed setting up asylum centers in North Africa. He said that in the long run, that solution would make sense. We asked you how Germany should deal with the increasing number of refugees risking their lives to travel to Europe.
While Yakti wrote back and said, "The word camp is not an easy word. I prefer to avoid it. However, I think what should be done by all the world is making those compounds, regardless their location, under real administration, Germany or whoever, and promote the productivity of asylum seekers by setting up horticultural production projects or any sort of projects within those compounds. Applying such idea will give dignity to the refugees and will mirror its benefits to all."
Sam DW says, "I think European communities are making a terrible mistake by granting those asylum seekers what they seek, because no one actually is capable of doing this journey unless they have $5,000 more or less and luck enough to get to the man in charge to get them into Europe." Quite a strong comment there. And would like to get your opinion about it. Now, Eunice, how many cows could a woman be worth?
Oops. Is that question directed to me?
Not at all, Eunice. It's about a new app that lets users calculate how much dowry a woman would be worth in the tradition known as lobola in South Africa. The app uses beauty, education, weight and waist size when calculating a woman's worth. The app's developer says it is light-hearted but could also help families resolve disputes over dowry. So we asked what people thought of the app. Now, Eunice, tell us some of the comments.
Shiro Mark wrote and said, "No one is worth a cow, no matter how many they might be." Mm-hmm. And Lynn Manners also wrote and said, "This is common in pastoral societies throughout the world."
Okay, we can leave it at that. Today a week, Robert Mugabe celebrated his 91st birthday and was fêted at a lavish party near the Victoria Falls, accompanied by criticism at home and from abroad. Part of the menu was two elephants and more than 100 beasts. This act of animal cruelty angered conservationists.
Via Mortality wrote and said, "It is jolly hard to see how his birthday bash justified the slaughter of two baby elephants." And Tayo Aweni wrote and said, "How long he has ruled shouldn't be an issue of debate. He should be judged based on how he rules his people. Besides, the Queen of England has been there before a country like Nigeria got independence in 1960.
Lastly, we posted a story about Sierra Leone's Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana putting himself into precautionary quarantine after one of his bodyguards died from Ebola. All I can say is that many people liked this story and shared it around. That's it from us.
And that was Isaac Mugabe and Eunice Wanjuru. Remember, you too can comment on stories we've been covering by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160 957-59510. A reminder of our main stories. Talks in Addis Ababa between South Sudan's warring factions are expected to continue today after they missed Thursday's deadline to secure a peace deal. Women's groups around the globe are preparing to celebrate International Women's Day. Women's Day this Sunday, and the government in Zimbabwe has been criticised for handing out 8 broadcasting licences to state-aligned companies. And there we come to the end of another week here on Africa Link. Do try and join Isaac Mugabe when the programme returns on Monday. Have a pleasant weekend. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.